Barney, welcome. My name's Ian Campbell from Palliative Care Australia in Canberra on the lands of the Ngunnawal and Ngambri peoples. Welcome to Thursdays at 3, our regular series of conversations with people living and working at the end of life. Today, on the back of Michael J. Fox taking to the stage with Coldplay at Glastonbury recently, we explore life and death with Parkinson's disease. Sharing his experience is Victor McConvey, who's the manager of health, clinical and community services at Fight Parkinson's. Hi, Victor. Looking forward to our chat today. Thanks for making time.
Hello, Ian. Great to see you.
Victor, what went through your head and heart when you saw that great footage of Michael J. Fox and Chris Martin rocking it out on the stage at Glastonbury?
I thought, what a wonderful moment. And what a wonderful example of someone who's been living with Parkinson's for many years, being such a positive role model. And I think from all of us in the movement disorder space, we are so indebted to Michael and his work, which probably is the largest funder of Parkinson's research globally.
I'm keen to talk more about Michael J. Fox and his experience, but let's start with the basics, Victor. Victor, you're one of Australia's most knowledgeable healthcare professionals on Parkinson's care, a nursing career that spans 30 years, including 20 years as a Parkinson's clinical nurse consultant. And in 2022, you received an Order of Australia Medal for services to nursing and Parkinson's. You're the right fella for this conversation. Victor, what is Parkinson's disease?
So Parkinson's disease is a movement disorder. So it's a condition where the brain produces less and less dopamine because of an accumulation of a protein called alpha-synuclein. Now the dopamine that the brain is producing in less and less volumes is responsible for normal motor and autonomic nervous system coordination and directly relates to the symptoms of Parkinson's. So the tremor that people develop, the stiffness and the slowness, but also changes to bowel function, bladder function, and things such as intimacy as well.
Do we know what causes Parkinson's disease yet?
We don't know. It's a really interesting space of research. We know that there is a very small percentage of people who have a familial Parkinson's disease, which is related to a number of different gene changes that we've been able to identify. There is an increasing discussion around environment plus genetics in some people might cause Parkinson's, but for most people it's an unknown cause.
Are numbers on the rise?
Absolutely. It's the fastest growing neurological disease we see globally, with a 4% year-on-year increase in incidence. So in Australia at the moment, we estimate that there's about 220,000 Australians living with Parkinson's disease.
Is that related to our ageing population, or is there something else happening that we just can't put our finger on yet?
In part, it will be because of our ageing population, but there are other factors that are at play. We are seeing an increasing incidence of people living with early and young onset Parkinson's as well. And that, again, is a global phenomena. So many researchers around the world are trying to investigate why the incidence is increasing to such a degree.
Who has Parkinson's disease, Victor? Who's being diagnosed with it?
Well, anyone can be diagnosed with it. So 80% of people are diagnosed over the age of 65, and that's in all racial and cultural groups. 20% of people are diagnosed with young onset or early onset Parkinson's. So about half of that 10%, so 5% are under the age of 65. And we see about 5% of our incidents under the age of 50 on diagnosis.
What are the early warning signs, or what are the red flags for people?
It's a really slow progressive disease, and most people will present to their medical practitioners when they notice a motor symptom that is typically maybe some stiffness, changes in handwriting, or maybe some tremor. But we know there's actually some really interesting pre-motor symptoms that are evident for many years before you develop any motor symptoms, and those the most common ones that we see are loss of sense of smell, increasing problems with constipation, and acting your dreams out, so a REM behaviour disorder. So when you get to that deep dream sleep, instead of becoming sort of atonic, you are acting your dreams out.
What does that look like when you say acting your dreams out? Can you explain
that? If you're dreaming that you're kicking a football on the stage, you might well have drop-kicked your bed partner out of bed. So you're physically enacting those dreams.
Okay. Okay. Are there lifestyle choices or lifestyle measures that we can implement to safeguard ourselves from Parkinson's?
No, there aren't. There isn't any preventative measures at this stage that we can take.
And what sort of prognosis is there? What's the trajectory once you're diagnosed with Parkinson's disease?
So Parkinson's is a slowly progressive illness where over many years there is an accumulation of disability. There, unlike many other neurological conditions such as motor neuron disease, there are no facial symptoms of Parkinson's. So there's no symptom of PD that will actually kill you. But that cumulative disability in advanced disease does predispose you to sort of things such as hypostatic pneumonia, which is probably the main cause of people's end of life, but also falls and fractures because obviously there's probably gait and balance as well.
Yeah. Is there a relationship between Parkinson's and other neurological diseases, things like dementia?
No, and increasingly we're starting to understand that cognitive change that does occur in Parkinson's is very different to that which occurs in dementia, and we see some changes in our executive function, so ability to do complex tasks, multitask, might show up as word-finding difficulties as opposed to a dementia. There was a common belief that most people with Parkinson's would get dementia. But as we've done more and more research, we've discovered that when we do see dementia in Parkinson's, it's usually from another pathology, not Parkinson's disease itself.
I see. Let's bring Michael J. Fox back into the picture. Many will be very familiar with his journey with Parkinson's, and he's been gracious enough to share it with the world. How typical is his experience with Parkinson's compared to the average person?
So Michael is part of that 5% of that early onset. He was diagnosed when he was about 28, and his first motor symptom is well documented in his biography as noticing a small finger tremor. And obviously it's progressed subsequently. He has had lots of different treatments, including some brain surgery and implantation of an electric probe to help stimulate some brain activity to actually help treat his symptoms. He's incredibly proactive in the way that he manages his condition. He engages in exercise regularly, and exercise is probably the only thing in Parkinson's that has good evidence to say it might be neuroprotective or to slow the progression of the disease down.
Have you ever met him, Michael J. Parkinson, or is it on your bucket list?
I haven't
list?
Met him, no. It's on my bucket list. I'm fortunate enough to be involved in a number of different programs where he might turn up at an international level, probably the next big one where he could turn up is actually in the United States, which is the World Parkinson's Congress, which is an amazing conference, usually 5,000 to 8,000 people, researchers, clinicians, nurses like me, but most importantly, probably half of our delegation are people living with Parkinson's and their families as well. So it's an amazing conference, and that's going to be May 2026 in Phoenix.
Okay, fingers crossed. Victor, you mentioned the research work that Michael J. Fox's foundation is involved in. Where is research at generally? Where's the focus at the moment?
So the research for Parkinson's is broad. Probably the most significant recent discoveries have been some biomarkers for Parkinson's, which has directly come from the research of the Michael J. Fox Foundation and their Parkinson's Progressive Markers Initiative, where we can now take a sample of cerebrospinal fluid and actually give you a clinical diagnosis of Parkinson's disease. And so it's like, actually, you've definitely got Parkinson's.
Yeah.
Prior to this discovery, it was a clinical diagnosis based on examination and the symptoms that you exhibited and could not be confirmed until post-mortem. So this new test for Parkinson's, which is largely being applied to research at this stage, is really proving a game changer. It's also starting to make us understand that Parkinson's might be a spectrum disorder, so it might actually be more than one condition, because we're seeing some people with all the symptoms of Parkinson's when we test are not coming back with what we'd expect. So it's really going to be a huge enabler for personalised medicine into the future, but also will really tighten up our clinical trials so that we know that when we're entering a clinical trial, we can apply this biological test and know that our candidate has got Parkinson's disease, whereas previously we had washout people who didn't have Parkinson's. So it's a huge step forward. But we're also doing research in better treatments, improving DBS therapies, more drug therapies to help people who've got the condition now to live well, which is fantastic. We're covering it all.
Let's talk some more about live well. That's very much the motto of palliative care as well. You're diagnosed with Parkinson's. There's shock that comes with that, no doubt. But what would be your advice at that point in time for someone who's newly diagnosed with Parkinson's? What happens next when it comes to that quality of life that you point to?
So when you're newly diagnosed with any illness, do some research about the condition from reputable places. So peak bodies, neurological agencies such as Michael J. Fox Foundation or Shake It Up in Australia. Fight Parkinson's has got some great resources. Engage with recently diagnosed programs and start to become an expert in managing the condition. In understanding that Parkinson's is more than just the tremors. There's complex non-motor symptoms such as depression, pain, anxiety, hallucinations are all part of the condition. So understanding this is a broad condition that affects many aspects of life. If you're informed, you can better manage those symptoms when they arise, understand that they are a Parkinson's symptom and feel reassured that we can actually manage effectively. Actively engage with healthcare providers. Ask annoying questions. Be a squeaky wheel. And it's the most important thing you can do is actively engage. Understand your disease is not going to be managed just by a neurologist or a physician. It's going to be managed by a team. So seeing an OT, a speech pathologist, a physiotherapist, a Parkinson's nurse if you can get hold of one, a psychologist and a social worker to look after your mental health, to have that holistic view of managing your condition, which will affect many aspects of your life, but also your family's life as well.
Victor, that team approach, that holistic approach is very palliative care as well. Where do palliative care professionals sit in someone's Parkinson's journey? A lot of people will freak out as soon as they're referred to a palliative care service or a palliative care professional. Where does palliative care sit in someone's Parkinson's journey?
Palliative care services are incredibly important. They are often highly skilled professionals who intuitively know about psychosocial welfare as well as complex things such as pain management. So they are incredibly important. There might be some knowledge gaps, and I've been involved in some research that identifies there's knowledge gaps in neurology about what palliative care can deliver, but also in palliative care about the needs of someone with people with Parkinson's and other movement disorders. So we really need to start to blend our two skills together to optimise the care for people with Parkinson's. We might also need to poke government a little bit to sort of say that, you know, the palliative care model for someone with a neurological disease is different to maybe someone with an oncology-based diagnosis, and that palliative period might be a little bit longer and more unpredictable.
You lead me to my next thought around, I guess, an early referral to a palliative care team. Too often people are referred to palliative care way too late in the final days and weeks of their life. But I think with something like Parkinson's, the palliative care team can really have an impact really early in terms of setting someone up to live well for as long as possible.
Absolutely. And even preceding that, something that none of us are very good at doing is having those difficult discussions around advanced care planning, having that understanding about what is my quality of life, what's important for me, and understanding that's going to be different for every person. And that is an incredibly powerful thing that we can do, which really helps identify those points when actually we might want that palliative care team involved. And it might be before we get a chest infection, it might be that, you know, my quality of life has started to diminish. I'm thinking if I got something significant, I wouldn't want to go to hospital. That's a really great flag. Refer to the palliative care service. you might not need a direct actually service at this stage, but becoming familiar, allowing those professionals to know you is a great way to start to manage those conditions. And I think on both sides, understanding that there are resource limitations, that we everyone will do the best they possibly can.
Yeah.
But early on is ideal in my world, yes.
Victor, what do you want palliative care professionals, palliative care volunteers to know about caring for someone with Parkinson's? Are there any particular things you want the palliative care sector to know about caring for someone with Parkinson's?
That very much that multidisciplinary approach continues. And often when we are getting in very complex symptoms and nearing life, we'll probably need to involve our speech and our OT and our physio all working together. So you may well have your occupational therapist sitting with your speech pathologist to identify the optimal seating position for someone with very advanced disabling Parkinson's to optimise their swallow so they can maintain some hydration and nutrition. Looking at skin care, physiotherapy, looking at do we need to teach family members maybe some assisted coughing. And that all-encompassing managing, using the palliative care nurse's skills to manage things such as complex secretion management, pain management, understanding the neurogenic and the neuromuscular pain that we need to manage. So blending all of these skills together is a perfect way to give someone an end of life with dignity and the best symptom control that we actually can manage.
Victor, if you Google Victor McConvoy, fight Parkinson's, the word neuropalliative care will come up in your Google search. Explain that term. It's a new term to me. What is neuropalliative care?
So neuropalliative care is a relatively new model of palliative care, which really factors in the complexities of long-term neurological illness. Understanding that the palliative phase often starts months, if not years, before we get to any symptoms that might be life-ending. And it is that blend of multidisciplinary support, skilled healthcare professionals, and really focusing very much on symptom management, putting the patient in the centre to find out what is the most significant goals and symptom concerns for the patient, and a very much empowering patient-centred model of care, and where we're blending the skills of the palliative care service, acute neurology, rehabilitation medicine, all together to provide a very supportive matrix of care for someone who's often got very complex symptoms. Neuropalliative care models also acknowledge, particularly in diseases like Parkinson's disease, the long-term nature that the family will have had in caring for someone. Because we're talking decades. Most people live with Parkinson's for 30 or 40 years, particularly early onset. And that family member and members are inextricably woven into the care of that person. And that family, that care model needs to be family sensitive. And there will be issues around relinquishing care, feelings of guilt when we're not treating something that previously might have treated. And that family need to be nurtured as well.
Victor, I guess with any challenge in life, there's a flip side. What do people get from having Parkinson's in terms of how to live well or their perspective on life? What do you notice about the carers, the people with Parkinson's, that inspires your work?
Look, from my perspective, the people with Parkinson's inspire me every day. They come in, they're living with a progressive neurological illness. They will actively engage in exercise because we know that's good. People start to really pay attention to their diet. And many people start to, particularly some of our older patients, will start to sort of say, actually, I need to see someone else. I want a second opinion rather than just sort of being a complacent. People engage in all sorts of things. So we're running some amazing programs. We've got boxing and Parkinson's programs. We've got singing and Parkinson's programs, all which have some therapeutic benefits. So people actively engaging, inquiring, asking awkward questions, and using our services. And what is always astounding is even when I'm delivering bad news about we can't do much more about something, people are always incredibly polite and grateful, even though sometimes I'm giving them news that they don't want.
So there is a real opportunity here to enrich your life through through Parkinson's.
I think it provides a different perspective on life. And right from that diagnosis right the way through, I think many people with Parkinson's start to realise that quality of life is, it's a very abstract comment. Concept, but that you've got to grasp it and that it changes. And what you think at the beginning of your diagnosis is thinking, I wouldn't want to be like that. When you get to the point where you are quite disabled, actually, I'm still getting joy from life.
Yeah. Victor, you mentioned before your experience around delivering bad news, and often for health professionals, that will be a barrier for them for talking about palliative care, talking about end-of-life planning, and not having the skills or the confidence to deliver that bad news will stop them and sort of diminish the experience of their patient as well. Do you have any advice when it comes to being the one delivering that bad news? How do you approach that sort of situation? What would you share with your colleagues?
Plain language. Sensitive. Choose your location well. And so it shouldn't happen in a corridor. It needs to happen in a quiet location. Silences are fine within a conversation. People are thinking and digesting. I will often be quite direct and try to be very clear and concise with my language. And I give people whatever time they need. I will use my intuition as a human being and as a nurse to follow up as well. That might be a day later or a week later to sort of say, we've had a difficult conversation, how are you feeling now?
Yeah.
And when I'm delivering some difficult news, I will also sort of have what I can do. This is what we can do. This is not great, but there's always something we can do.
And how do you cope with that inevitable emotional load in your own life, Victor? How do you look after yourself when you're in that space and carrying that mental load?
I do a bit of self-care. And for me, I'm a runner. That's my zen place. That's where I find my equilibrium. So I make sure that I engage myself in activity, which is running for me. And that we also, as the team, my team at Fight Parkinson's, we're also fantastic at reflective practice, at debriefing and discussing when we've had difficult, complex and sometimes upsetting interactions.
Victor, what do you want the rest of us to know about interacting with people, carers, family, living with Parkinson's? Often people don't know what to say, don't know what to do, and perhaps might even avoid people with Parkinson's or people of facing the end of their life. What advice do you have for the wider community about engaging with people with Parkinson's, their family and their carers?
I think it is a really important thing to keep interacting, to keep engaging. Understanding that Parkinson's does affect communication, you do need to be a bit patient. And when we approach, so we might understand that someone doesn't necessarily get the words out in the right order, or it might be a bit faint, it's okay to sort of say, oh, did you mean, is this what you said? Never try and end someone's sentence for them though. Allow them to get it out. And appreciate that patience is incredibly valuable for us, and it is so valued by the person with Parkinson's. It can be a really isolating condition. because as you get more disabled, you're able to access the world less and less. And similarly, family members also do that too. So making sure that if you've got a neighbour with Parkinson's, that you're popping around and saying hello.
Yeah.
Is there anything we can do?
Yeah. And I guess, you know, doing what you would have done previously before you knew they had Parkinson's.
Yeah.
Victor, it's been such a joy to share this space with you and know some more about Parkinson's. Thank you so much for what you do and sharing this time with us today. Thank you.
Great. Thanks, Ian. It's been a pleasure.
Victor McConvey, who's the Manager of Health, Clinical and Community Services at Fight Parkinson's. You'll find more info and links in the show notes. Thanks so much for tuning in to Thursdays at 3 and engaging in matters of life and death. You'll find advice, tools and support at the Palliative Care Australia website, where you can also make a donation to support our work. We'll talk again soon. Ta-da.